copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
This whole idea of social media, digital media, and I'm going to lump them all together, is, at least in the West, in the United States, is probably the most talked about subject in all of media because of the impact that it has on whether it's the tweens, adults. I mean, it impacts every one of us every day. The question is, how do marketers use it? How do they figure out how to use media, social media in the first place, to influence what we do, to influence our decisions? Because if we understand how they do it, then as Christians, we can try to apply some of those same practices to what we do. So we need to understand how to go through building a strategy. Does that make sense? Now, for those of you that were here last year, you know this as well. I don't wait till the end to ask questions. It'll get to a point where we have to have some banter back and forth. So it ends up becoming less of a lecture and more of a conversation in some of these spots. But we'll start off with a couple of things. Let's see if we can get this thing to work. So things are changing aggressively, rapidly in social media. What's changing? What's been the future? The last 20 years, how has technology and digital media changed? How has it changed in your country? This is where you've got to give me some feedback here so I can use this.
More devices.
More devices. What else?
Very fast.
Very fast. What else?
Relationships based.
Relationships based online, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Both.
Could it be good?
Interactivity.
Interactivity. What else has changed?
Internet appeared, by the way, in 1998, 99
years. Yeah, so if you look at the first kind of 20 years, for 1970 is really when the first email went back and forth between two computers, right? 1980 is when people started making funny names for their usernames. So I wouldn't be SteveLoez@gmail.com. Back then I was shortbaldguy@gmail.com, right? That's kind of what happened in the 80s. But then what happened in 2003? What started in 2003?
Facebook.
Actually, LinkedIn started in 2003. Facebook started in 2004. What happened in 2005?
Twitter.
YouTube. What happened in 2006? So think about what happened the first 20 years, and we thought that was fast. And now let's look at from 2003 to today. How fast has it changed? I mean, look at what Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn. Now there's a whole lot of other things that are coming out as well. But the speed of change is faster now than it ever has been before. So as marketers or people in media, it causes problems. Because how do you know what to use? How do you know what new tool to start implementing so you can start reaching folks? It's not the easiest thing in the world to be able to do, so there's a lot of history. What about this change? And for those of you that were here last year, you remember me talking about this. It went from Web 1.0 to Web 2.0. Now we're talking about Web 3.0. What was Web 1.0?
Uploading.
It was one-way communication. So basically, Web 1.0 was, here's my website, or here's a PDF of my marketing information, I'm going to send it to you. You're going to look at it, you're going to read it, and that was it. What's Web 2.0? Back and forth. So now we can communicate. We're supposed to be able to engage and interact. What's Web 3.0 going to look like?
You upload your own content.
You upload your own content. What else? That's already happening, though.
The internet knows who you are,
and that's actually closer to reality than you might think. That's kind of a joke, I know. But think about how people use the internet today, how people use social media. So think about it. Let me give you an example in the United States. So if I'm an employee in the United States, and I'm potentially going to go work for another company, and let's say I'm interviewing with three different companies, where's the first place I go to find out information about those companies? Well, I'm going to go to their website first, probably. Where's the second place I'm going to go? Social media. Google's going to take me to social media, and I'm going to start to see what everybody else has said about your organization, your cause, your mission, your business, what have you. So you need to be thinking about that for every organization that you represent. Just because you're not pushing a lot of stuff out there necessarily, the web is so open now that they will find information on you, and sometimes it's the information you don't want anybody to know because it's not truthful in the first place. There's a saying, because it's online, it must be true. Really? We all know that that's not the case. But we have to understand some of these things that are going on. This whole idea of digital media is completely changing the way in which we do things. This practical life thing. How has social media changed the way we operate day in, day out? So yeah, things have gotten faster, but how has it changed the world today? What are some practical changes that it's already made in the way we operate?
We don't need any friends anymore.
We don't what?
Friends anymore.
We don't need friends anymore. That's not a good one, though.
No.
How else? How else is social media being utilized that has changed the way we do something over the last 5 or 10 years?
Like Twitter short message.
Short messaging.
And pictures. We start to speak more with pictures, Instagram and
others. Sure. Pictures. Instant. You've got, I mean, what's the one you use, Lauren?
Instagram.
Vine. Instagram. I mean, all these crazy tools. But what about the impact on day-to-day life? That's kind of new technologies, but how does that impact how we live and breathe every day?
Every day we visit, from the morning, our social media.
Yeah, the minute we get up in the morning, what do we do? Take out our cell phone and we look at Facebook. Well, who messaged me at 2 in the morning?
Email, likes, shares, the account in it.
But let's think about it even from a more practical perspective. Look at journalism. We're in the media class, right? Look at journalism. How has it affected journalism?
We
learn news within seconds. So
right now it's important, like, news.
Yeah, so when I get the first thing I look at my cell phone is not Facebook, by the way, but I have a bunch of apps that feed me real time all the news releases, all the breaks. So 55% of the global community now that is online gets their news off a mobile device, off of some type of social media outlet. Think about that. In fact, journalists say 65% of journalists say they do a lot of their research now online, using other social media tools. So it's changing the way we gather information and dispel information. What about law enforcement? Police officers, how do they use social media?
Location.
What's that?
Location.
Mm-hmm. What else?
Asking for information, so citizens commit a crime or something.
Yeah, 4 in 5 police officers across the globe will say that they spend a lot of time on social media now when they're investigating crimes, because people are stupid enough to put their crimes up on the web, or where were they at a specific time and so forth. So it's completely changed practically the way law enforcement operates. What about education?
Online courses.
You go even further than that. How about social media itself? So in the United States, 4 out of 5 professors use social media to actually communicate with their students. In Europe, it's 2.5 out of 5, according to the most recent study. That's still 50% of university professors are leveraging tools and social media to communicate. So it's literally changed the way in which we operate day in and day out. We've got to have that perspective before we could really get into how do we build a strategy to use all these tools that are actually out there. Is that making sense?
Yeah.
Am I going too fast?
No, it's okay.
Throw something at me if I am. Okay?
Quicker.
Go quick. Okay. So we're going to try to hit 7 items today. And the titles may not make sense, but as I explain each of them, I think it will make some sense to you. So the first one is defining your goals. And I'm going to ask you in a second, what are your goals when using digital media? What are you trying to accomplish? I just want to see where your thoughts are in comparison to some of the best practices around it. The second thing is identifying your audience. This is one thing that we have found across the globe that organizations do not do. In fact, individuals don't do. They go right onto social media, they jump in feet first and say, I'm going to use every tool that's out there and I'm going to put out whatever content I can, but they don't even really know how to look at their audience and figure out where their audience actually plays. Where are they? What are they doing? Why is that important? We'll talk about that. And then we'll talk a little bit about prioritizing some of these tools and some of these methodologies. What do we want to use first? And then we'll talk about messaging, call to action. What should the call to action be, depending on some of those first things? And then leveraging content. Very few organizations, especially Christian organizations, which are always fighting for dollars in the U.S., right, to funding and so forth, you can't have somebody or a group, a team of people that are creating new content all the time. So there are actually ways to leverage content you already have that still keeps the conversation going. So you're kind of repackaging some of that content in different ways and different avenues. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Then we'll talk about this idea of getting and getting. And then one of the most important one is, how do you know if what you're doing in digital media is working? Well, because I have 3 more followers. Okay. What does that mean? How important is it to have 3 more followers? What are you really trying to do? And are the things that you're doing, do they actually work? So those are the 7 things we're going to try to cover in 45 minutes. Fair? Okay, let's look at this first one. If I were to come to each of you and say, what are your goals when using social media or digital media? What would you tell me your goals are?
Private goals for the organization.
Let's say an organization. What are your goals as an organization or the organizations you represent when using social media?
To inform, to stay in touch with the audience, with the member of the organization, and to promote the events.
So to inform, to stay in touch, to promote events. What else?
People identify with you.
Say that again.
People identify with you.
Get people to identify with you. What else? What do you use it for?
Send a message.
Send a message. What else?
To raise awareness of some strategic goal.
To raise awareness. How do you measure that?
That's the last point.
Oh, wait a minute. I got to wait till I get to number 7 on that one. But I want you thinking about those things. When we talk about defining goals, goals have got to be something you can measure. Right? How else do you know if you've hit the goal or not? And there are, in fact, some ways to measure awareness, which we'll talk about in number 7. They're not foolproof. They're not exact. They probably never will be. But there are some things that you can use online that will figure out what is the influence of your mission, your brand, your organization, whatever it might be. And they're actually really inexpensive, which is great. So when we look at goals, are there any – well, let me take it back. Are there any other goals that we use it for, that we use digital media for? Have you that you've used it in your organization for? Anything else, or do you think we've covered them all? Nobody's answering. Did we cover them all?
No. To get in contact with others.
To get in contact with others. So this is the most important part. That's why this is number 1. Using Facebook, Twitter, just to throw content out there, if you don't know why you're using it, will never be effective. You may get a little bit of an increase in traffic over a period of time, but if you don't know what you're doing it for, it's not a long-term thing. It becomes a very short-term strategy. In fact, there should be short-term goals as well as long-term goals because they lead up to the long-term goal. So if in 3 years you are really focused on brand awareness, and we'll talk later about what that looks like, do you think you're going to get there overnight? What are the goals that you have leading up to the 3 years? Most people don't look at digital media that way. They kind of look at, here's my end goal. I want to get to the awareness side. But what about all the other things? What's the message you're trying to communicate first, right? So are you promoting an organization? Most of us would say yes. Is it a cause? Is it a belief? Is it a vision? So forth. All of these things are different goals, which would be approached very differently with digital media if you're trying to get your message out there. The way you promote an organization is very different than a cause. They could be this very similarly linked because usually an organization has a cause, has a specific belief, a vision, and then potentially events, as you said. This is actually the easiest one to promote. These are a bit more difficult to get out there. But first you have to understand, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to promote first? Then what's second? So first is, what's my message I'm trying to get out there? What's second? Thoughts? Well, we'll get there. What's the desired result? We're still on goals here. So first is, what's the message? Second is, what's my desired result? What do I mean by desired result? You guys said some of them.
I'll expect them to react.
You want them to react. What else? Measurable goals. What are the other things that you're looking for? What's the desired result?
Expect an action.
Do you want to drive attendance at... These are examples, right? I want to drive attendance at an event. Very specific goal, something that you can measure, something that you can create a media strategy around. Can you not? Very specific. What about increase followers? I want to go from 100,000 followers on Facebook to 200,000 on Facebook. There may or may not be value depending on what my organization is trying to do. But again, you have a very specific goal of what you're trying to accomplish, knowing what you're saying. Do I want to drive website traffic? So what's more important? Do I want to drive more followers? Or do I want to drive people to my website?
Followers.
Do you? Why?
Website.
Why?
Because followers come to your website and you have to come to them.
Is focusing on one over the other wrong? My point is, it's different for every organization at a specific time. Today, if I've got enough followers, I'm not focused on this. Maybe I can't get them to my website, so what's my focus? Now it becomes driving them to here. If I have enough coming to my website, but I haven't built a following, for whatever reason, they're not liking me on Facebook or my organization on Facebook, now I want to focus on this. But we have a tendency to lump all these things together and say, we need to do them all with social media today. And then we wonder why nothing's working. It's like the saying in the United States is a jack of all trades, a master of none. You know what that saying is? So I try to do a little bit of everything, and I do a little bit of everything kind of, where I'm not really focusing on the one thing that's most important to me at that given time. And we don't go through this. What about gathering contact info? So getting their handle off of Twitter or something is one thing. Getting their contact information, like their email address, their phone number, so I can actually pick up the phone and later relate to them, that's a whole different approach than doing potentially some of these. Now, these would be tied together in most cases. What about just sharing information, which is really what most of us do? Most organizations, it's just we think we're doing these other things, but all we're doing is throwing a bunch of information out there and hoping it sticks. Because we're not focusing on what's the short-term goal, what's the long-term goal. And you'll probably, and this is convert followers to real connections. There's a statistic around this, which I'll show you in a little bit. But actually converting people. So if you get them to follow you, and I don't mean converting people to Christianity. Please understand that, right? I mean, ultimately, that's the goal. But converting people means they've come to my website one way or the other, or to one of these. They've connected with me. They've given me that approval to actually pick up the phone and call them if that's the way I want to connect with them. That's what we call a conversion, and we'll look at that a little bit later. So you're probably all saying, well, we want to do all of that. In what order? Do you think you can do it all tomorrow? This is my point in figuring out what the strategy is. So if you go back to your organization, or you're consulting with another organization to figure out what their media strategy is, you first got to figure out what are they trying to communicate and what's the goal at that given time. And most savvy media folks would say, here's my 6-month goal, my 1-year goal, my 3-year goal, my 5-year goal. And it may be bits and pieces of this, depending on where you're starting off. Do you even have a website? Do you have any followers? Is there any value in having followers? I mean, it just depends on your particular organization. Does this make sense? Mm-hmm. Comments, questions, thoughts? Is anybody doing this?
Try.
Okay, so you've got it laid out like this? So you've got a complete media plan. Wonderful. You guys need to talk to her, not me. Okay, so number 2. Hey, well, let me go. Any other questions on that? Understanding what you want to communicate, understanding what the goal is. So the question was, should we do all of this or should we be more specific? The question is really based on the specific organization. And some organizations that are much more mature in this process, you could fit more in and still be effective. If you're starting with nothing, no, I would not recommend doing everything. I would recommend picking one or two, getting good and diligent, measuring your results, and then adding more and then adding more and seeing what's most effective. Part of this, as anybody who's in media knows, is trial and error. You don't know what's going to be the best until you measure it over a period of time. And these are not things that you can measure just over 30 days. Because you may get a quick hit in 30 days, or you may get nothing in 30 days, and the next 3 months all of a sudden make the difference. So it's got to be measured over a longer period of time. Does that answer your question? Most organizations, most individuals, they jump in, like I said, with both feet, and they try to do everything, and they wonder why nothing is working, because you can't focus on it that way. You have to have something to focus on. Any other thoughts, questions? Okay. Step number 2. Identify your audience. What do I mean? Google Analytics is one way, but what are you looking for? So let's first think about the changing demographics of people. Right, so we talked about tweeners a little while ago. The one thing I didn't mention is in the United States, There is a company, a clothing company called Tween Brands. Are you familiar with that? It's one of the largest, it's one of the fastest growing companies in the United States because it hits that, it's actually 8 to 14, give or take. There are many billions of dollars in sales because they know how important that tween group actually is. But let's think about demographic changes. So there's really four categories, now there's a fifth. But what are the four categories of individuals? You know, you hear the terms, what, Gen Xers, Gen Ys, and all this. What are the four categories? Why is that important? You know what the four are? Boomers, Gen Y, have you heard that term, or Gen X? Okay, so if you look at, if we're gonna start all the way on the left-hand side, and there's not many of these left, but we call them the silent generation. This is basically my grandparents, which are no longer alive. There's not a lot of these people left, but the way they communicated was very different, if you think about it, to the way we communicate today, right? Now, we don't have to, as media folks, we really don't have to focus as much on this generation because they're not really active in the workforce. There are really not many of them left out there. In the United States, I make the joke that most of them now work at Walmart as greeters because they've already retired long ago. They're trying to find, you get it. So, but that's where it started. The next, we went into the baby boomers, which would be my parents, right? They were much, very face-to-face, similar to the veterans, but we went from rotary phones to touch-tone phones, right? You remember rotary phones? Do any of you? Now touch-tone phones, right? Oh yeah, you remember that. But then there was this big shift, right? It seems like we had this millennial shift that we got into these Gen Xers. And now it was cell phones. And you remember the big cell phones that came in the big bag that you wore over your shoulder? They were so big. And now they've got, I mean, think about what we can do on our cell phones. But now, then we got the Gen Yers. And if you didn't have an iPhone or an Android or a BlackBerry, now if you have a BlackBerry, you're behind the times, as everyone else can consider. And now they're calling it the IY generation. So my daughter, who's right there, is actually the next generation, which is the IY generation. And now we're going to be really confused because we have no idea what motivates this IY generation in the way in which they communicate. Now, think about it from here to there. For media folks, why does that pose a problem? From here to there, in the way we want to communicate, why does it pose a problem? Well, yeah, so think about it. Just for, this is just basic categorization. Just from an age perspective, different ones respond better to different types of tools. Some respond better actually today still to direct mail. Now, if you send a direct mail piece to my daughter, what do you think she's going to do with it? Tear it up, throw it in the garbage. I send her a text, she'll respond. Very, very different. Now think about the subcategories that are under this, because of course there's different people have different drivers and so forth. And that's just a generalization even with my daughter. I don't know if she would throw it out or not. But you get my point. It's very, very, very different. So we've got to identify who our audience is. And then you said some of the key characteristics around it. So you're looking for things like gender. What else are you looking for? Potentially?
Age, whether they study or not.
There's just a whole list of them. I can't even get them all. I mean, it would be, yeah, do they have a degree or not? The geographic area they live in. Using social media, you can even find some of these other things. You can find habits. You can find some of their beliefs based upon where they go, what they're posting, and so forth. You can understand what their interests are. You can understand if they have needs. Now, why is that last one so important? Why do organizations, although they do all this, why do they focus on this?
You want to give answers?
Yeah. The most successful marketing campaigns, the most successful media strategies take into consideration all of this, but the ones that actually can address this get the greatest response. So are we just sending information out there to drive some followers, or are we focusing on addressing the needs where people are? Based on what you can find out about them, what's going to have the most productive response or interaction rate if you identify what those needs are? And if you use some of the analytic tools that are out there, you can start seeing what people are talking about. What are their needs? That's what marketers really want to focus on. Is that making sense? So do you segment? I mean, it's in a Christian organization, it's difficult, right? Because you want everybody. But by looking at what's really around you, where the biggest need is, it's a first place to start. Then we'll keep going on through this. Any questions? Does that make sense? What about this whole idea of where, which we kind of talked about? So once you know who you want to go after, you know the message you want to give, you've got to understand where these people are, right? That's why you're using Google Analytics or any other analytics that are out there, and there's many, many of them. Because this will start giving you an idea of what are some of the tools that you should start using. Because it'll be different for everybody depending on the region that you're in. Where are those people, based on the demographics you're looking at, based upon those people that have specific needs, where are they sitting and interacting? Are they on Twitter? In Poland, they're not. Why not? Now, I'm Polish, I can say this. Do you know why they're not in Poland? Why Twitter is not being really used in Poland?
Words.
Have you ever seen their words? I mean, our words are very, very long. I'm not fluent, but I know enough. And you can't, I mean, 140 characters to speak in Polish is almost impossible unless you're just using one or two words at a time. It's ridiculous. So the adoption of Twitter is not very good here. So you'd have to use something else. But what are they? Where are they on Facebook? Are they on Facebook? What are they doing on Facebook? Understanding where they are and what they're doing is important to being able to get access to them and communicate with them in the first place. Just by saying, hey, that 14 to 19-year-old happens to be on Facebook, great, how are they using it? Do you know how they're using Facebook? Depends on the region. Some of us we know, some of us we don't. What communities have the most followers? What avenue would best carry your message? And so forth. Basically, where are you going to find these individuals hanging out, communicating, once you've identified who they are and you know the message you want to send? With me so far? Questions? Comments? Now, what about figuring out where to start? How do you prioritize? So now you have this list of people you want to go after. You kind of have an idea of what the message you want to send. How do you start to prioritize? Where do you start? Any sense? Where do you start today? Because you're all in the media in some way or another, right? Yeah. How do you know where to go start today?
By seeing the program.
What's that?
By seeing the program.
Seeing what program?
Today's program.
Do you ever look at what others are doing? Mm-hmm. Think about it from a business perspective. So in the United States, I run a business, okay? And I want to know what my competitors are doing. I know exactly who my demographic is. I know where those people are. I know what they're doing on all those sites, right? But I've got competitors all throughout the globe. I better start looking at what they're doing and do some competitive analysis of what my competitors are doing to see what is working for the same type of people that they're going after. So what are the tools already out there that work? What campaigns have you seen that, hey, I would respond to this thing? So if I would respond to this thing, there's a good chance that other people that are short, bald, and Polish like me would respond as well, right? So you've got to understand that. So look at what others are doing. You don't have to reinvent the wheel every time you're trying to create some kind of new tool or new process behind what you're trying to do. Learn from others. There is still going to be some give and take in this, and there is still going to be some testing in this as well. You're not going to be able to get this all, but this will at least help you prioritize where you should start, where you should go. But I want you to be real careful about this. What is this? It's a shiny ball. What do you think babies do? Have you ever seen this? When you put something shiny and colorful in front of a baby, what do? They want to go for it, right? Why? Huh? It's attractive. It's the next cool thing. What do we do with social media? New app comes out. New tool comes out. Somebody says this is happening. Be careful about this. The shiny object syndrome is what I'm talking about. Right? Don't jump on the next thing just because it's the newest tool that came out. Just because it works in the United States doesn't mean it's going to work here. So be careful about this, what I also call the silver bullet syndrome, right? It's going to work for us because it worked in Russia or it worked in Belarus or it worked in wherever, right? Be careful, be careful. There's so many tools out there that you could get really caught up in this really, really quickly. A couple of hints on this. Be careful because wasted resources and unfinished ideas don't get your message across. And don't dilute by trying to be everywhere. Kind of goes to your point over there, right? If you try all that at the same time, again, you become kind of a jack of all trades and again, not a master of basically none. I've seen organizations over and over and over get caught up in this, where they put all their efforts into a new tool that came out, a new platform that came out, and they spend the dollars and it falls flat on their face because it never gets to the goals they want in the first place because they don't tie those in. See how all this plays together? So do you know what dominoes are? So you set up the dominoes, and if you knock one over, it knocks down all the other ones. You know what that analogy is, right? So this whole process is like the domino effect. If you pull one of those out, the rest of this doesn't work. So if we go all the way back to the beginning and we don't know what our message is, we don't know what our audience is, we don't prioritize, and then we jump on this bandwagon of let's try everything. We're little babies and we just want to grab it because it looks cool and somebody's talking about it or we heard a news release about it, we could potentially wind up getting into some trouble. With me so far? All right. So how do you message? Once you know all that, how do you communicate to people? So let's say our goal is to get people to an event. We know what our goal is. How do we communicate? What are some best practices around the actual words we choose? How do you communicate today? Come on, my media friends.
Post a message.
Post a message. What's the message say? What's the structure of the message?
Question.
A question?
Offer.
An offer?
Some really big words.
Some, like what?
The most amazing event.
Okay. How many people are going to send you a message that says, I have the really horriblest event that I want you to attend? What else? How else do you communicate today? Compact and memorable, okay.
Emotional.
Why emotional?
Because in social networks, people are looking for emotional things.
Is it just on social networks? In regular life, too, is what you said. If you see a nice picture of a little baby, you imagine family, so it makes you happy. Something happens, as you said. I didn't say it. You said it. Women have a tendency to cry. Okay, so how do marketers look at that? Is really the emotional side only something that is based on social media? How do marketers view emotion? That is the, I don't even want to use this term, but I'm going to use it anyways, holy grail, so to speak, of knowing what drives them, knowing what influences people. I mean, you have Coca-Cola here, right? Have you seen the advertisement with Coca-Cola that has the polar bear? Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you know why they use the polar bear? What does the polar bear have to do with Coca-Cola? Aside from it's cold. What? What did you say? You're right. Because when they tested it, they put it in front of a group of people and the people went, "Oh, it was so cute and cuddly." And they knew it got people's emotion going. So what did they do? They've used it ever since. Because it incites a certain emotion in us. It hits a need or a nerve button by getting to the right emotion. But that's only part of it. So you've got to kind of get to the need and the emotion. What's the other part of it? You got to have a call to action. You got to make sure it's not just sending information. If you're trying to hit those goals that are up in the front, if you're trying to drive traffic, if you're trying to get more people to convert, whatever the case might be, you've got to first hit their emotional needs, and then you've got to be able to move on and have some type of call to action. I'll give you an example how most people do it. This is where we get it wrong. Marketing is very close to selling. Would you agree? Now, I don't like to be selling the gospel, so please let's separate that from business for a second because we're talking about media, right? But when we're marketing, what are we trying to do? We're trying to sell something, either an idea or an activity or something along those lines. The problem is we have a tendency to do it all wrong. We want to sell what we have. Versus what, in most cases? What they need or what they want. Now, how does that play out in reality? Let me give you one illustration. It's my daughter might appreciate this. I don't know if she's ever heard this one. I'm a car fanatic. I love cars. I'm just a car nut. Being in Michigan, Detroit, it's what they call the Motor City, right? So my daily driver, I've been buying from the same person who you know, Karen, for 15 years. I bought all my cars, most of them, from the same individual for 15 years. So this goes back a few years ago. I was going in to turn my car in, actually the last service before turning my car, and I had it on a lease. So I had it for 2 years, and I give it back, and I get into another one. And prior to the end of that 2 years, I have to take it in for service and have the oil changed and all the maintenance. It's my responsibility. So as the car is being serviced, I walk into the showroom. And as I go into the showroom, I'm looking at all the vehicles, and I see a Lincoln MKX. It's a sport utility. That's all you need to know. That's sitting on the floor inside the organization. Okay, I thought, wow, that's really a nice vehicle because it had fancy wheels and all the stuff that I happen to like as a car guy. I ended up not getting it, though. I actually left, got home, and by the time I got home, I'm kicking myself saying, I should have got that car while I was in there. So the next day, I go back. Well, Karen doesn't work 7 days a week. She only works 5 days a week. Even though the next day was a Tuesday or a Wednesday, she was off that day. So I decide I'm going to go and look at that truck or that SUV one more time. Okay, so I walk into the dealership, and it's probably over in that corner inside because it's all souped up and everything. And as I'm walking toward it, there's a little car in front of it. You know what an MG is? It's a British car, a little green car, convertible top. They made it back in the 60s and so forth. They had taken it in on trade. So I decided to look at this vehicle. And I'll tie all this in so you understand it here in a second. So as I'm walking around the vehicle, a sales guy walks up to me and starts telling me everything about the vehicle. He knew it. He knew who owned it. He knew when it was restored. He knew all the specs on it. He knew everything. And then he goes to tell me the price. And I said, well, it's more than what I want to spend. And he goes, well, it's a typical in the United States used car sales approach. Let me go talk to my boss and see if I can get you a better deal. So he comes back 5 minutes later and he says, here, I've got this better deal. And I still said, it's too expensive. And really, I'm not here to get that. I'm actually here to get that. And I want to get it from Karen. And he looks at me and he's really upset. And he says, well, why didn't you tell me that? What do you think I said? Why didn't you ask? That's a perfect description of what we do as marketers. We have a tendency to want to throw information out and hope some of it sticks. We never really spend the time to find out on the back end and ask what the real need is. Ask what we're trying to get to, what we're trying to address. But then we've got to get to this call of action. So one is identifying the need. The next thing is keeping it pretty short, but having a call to action. This message is actually critical because the wrong message, as you all know, it's either going to pull us closer to your cause, or what is it going to do? Alienate us. Now, I will use a Christian example. And if you just send out a mass email and says, you're all going to hell. Now, you may get somebody who responds and says, oh my gosh, please tell me more, and that would be the best thing. But what are most people going to do that are non-believers? They're not going to want to see anything from you ever again. So the message is critical. Although the message might be right, it's how we send that message out. And I am not saying to water anything down by any stretch of the imagination. I'm just giving you real-world kind of thoughts around this from the business side of things that works across the globe. Simple and to the point without jargon. Emphasizing your cause, we get all that. People love to learn, tell them something they don't already know. But let me give you one example. Do you know Oxfam?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't like the organization myself, but they have some really great campaigns and examples of this when we look at calls to action. Okay. So one particular situation, this investing in education for developing countries, do you know what their marketing kind of spiel was, or their marketing message was? So it addressed a need. All at the same time, education is every child's right. It was that simple. Have any sense of what kind of response they got off of this? It's probably one of the most successful campaigns that have ever happened in terms of the people that had no idea of who Oxfam was, that when they saw this, because they hit an emotional tie. And then at the bottom of the emails and some of the social media and some of the other things that they've done, we have an entire case study on this if you ever want to see it. Be happy to send it to you. Was a call to action. Because everybody said, who's going to say every education is not a child's right? Who's going to say that? Who's going to go and say it's not a right of every child? Nobody. And then the next thing was a call to action, as simple as donate here, as simple as it's only $12 a month on your credit card, it's only this, it's only that. But there was this really easy flow from there's a need, they're tugging on our heartstrings, to here's our call to action, you have to get them to the next step. Am I making sense? If you want to see the study we did on this, again, please let me know, because it dissects the entire social media, digital media, and print campaign that they did on this. And it was just wonderful, even though the organization is, you probably know them better than I do. We just looked at them from a marketing perspective. Oh, this last piece. Awareness itself will not create change. What's the cycle of social media, of any digital media? Because we want to create awareness, right? But specifically when using social media, there's a plan, there's a direction that it heads into. Awareness leads to what? So if you have awareness of your cause, of your mission, of your website, and so forth, what does that ultimately lead to? Trust is one of the steps. Awareness leads to understanding, leads to what? In most cases, it's going to lead to more followers, because the more awareness, it will lead to followers, right? Once you have followers, if you're doing this right and you're interacting the right way, what comes after followers? Almost. What are you doing? You're engaging. Engagement builds, what did you say?
Trust.
What does trust allow you to do? Influence. That's the process that you want to be able to follow. Any marketer, that's what you're going to go after, if you're talking about social media specifically. So just because you get awareness doesn't mean you get influence. Using the right cause to action, using that process, you want to go from awareness to influence. Because if you can get them to influence, you can usually get them to do what you want them to do. That's where marketers succeed. That's where the media succeeds. Think about the influence we see every day from social media, on social media. We're getting bombarded by it all the time. It influences us because it's somehow we're trusting what information is coming out of that particular social media source. They're engaging with me, which builds the trust builds the actual influence. So we can't rely on this in and of itself. Questions? Understanding the needs of the audience. How do you know the needs of the audience? What you're not able to do is see if they went to somebody else's website. You'll be able to see them go from yours there, but you have no idea where they went on that particular website. So that is one way. If you can get them to your website, yes. So Constant Contact. So Constant Contact has analytics. That's one of them. So if you do a mass email or a mass message out through Constant Contact, you can see who it went to, obviously, who opened it up, who shared it, and to whom they shared it. But does that tell you what the needs of the individual are? It'll give you some information. But how else? What other ways to see what the needs of the community you're going after are? And I'll answer your question here in a second. Where's the place that they're talking about their most personal needs in a public setting? So are you interested in these things? Sure, but you got to find them first. So once you if you already have them and you want to identify what needs are, engage them in communication, and in that communication you can absolutely ask, what are the topics most important to you? Some people will tell you the truth, some people won't. That's one way to do it. If they go to your website, that's another way to do it. But how else can you do it? Where do we share what should be personal in a very public setting?
Twitter.
What else? Facebook. You can actually do sentiment monitoring of all of those tools, tracking specific usernames once you find them to see what are they talking about. It's amazing what people tweet about that they don't think anyone else sees, when yet everyone can see it. You get a sense of what their needs are. If you're a product-based organization, you get a sense of why people are complaining about your product, which engineers then use to redesign that product because they're trying to fill the need. But social, there's plenty of aggregating tools out there that are called sentiment monitoring tools that will look at all of those for you based on criteria that you actually load into the system. And these are free tools. Now, it also depends on, in your specific country, how active they are on social media. But if now you can add website analytics, questions, interaction, follow that up with what they're doing online on Twitter and so forth, you can start to get a clear picture of where their minds are at, what are they talking about, what are needs that you could potentially create content to engage them, build that trust, so ultimately you can go to the stage of influence, because that's where you want to take them eventually. Does that make sense? All of these are tied in together, but we've got to make sure that we're putting all the puzzle pieces together in the right way, or this is not going to work. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
In a real long, drawn-out way? Any other comments on that? Yeah. So the comment was, is Apple kind of against this? We tell you what you need, and we're not going to really ask you what you need. Yes and no. Think about how they started the product. They created and refined a product that at the time had the best user interface, the simplest to learn. Three-year-olds would pick up the phone and they would use this. How do you think they created that in the first place? They understood the needs of the community. Now, they did the research, and they have an entire research and development team. What they came out and what Steve Jobs' position really was when the other phone manufacturers, Samsung, LG, started making larger and larger and larger phones, and he said, no way will we ever do this. The crowd at large doesn't need to be able to do that. They're going to buy this. This is the best. It's the most easiest to fit in your hand and so forth. But that was far after it was already a great product and everybody was flocking to it because of how great of a product it was. Now, they've stuck to that gun to a certain extent, and although they're still growing internationally in the United States, what's happened? Now, they're going to come back up, I'm sure, they're talking about the iPhone 6 already. But you don't think they went out and did more research on what people really want for the iPhone 6? And they're already saying it's going to go to 4.7 inches from 4.3 or whatever it is right now. So they are starting to say, wow, everybody does want the bigger screens. We have to go to something bigger. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Other comments on that? That's actually a really good example of it. Comes up all the time. It's like, well, they're just driving them, you know, doing whatever they want. Not really. They got a little arrogant with the success they had, though, for a period of time. Now they're having to change that. Okay. And no more questions on that. We have 5, 6, and 7 to get through, so we've got to be able to do this. Okay, number 5. I get asked all the time, or I get comments all the time, and I got it last year here too, was, Steve, this stuff is all great, but I don't have the time to be creating new content all the time. I can't sit and write, I can't pay somebody to sit and write 7 days a week, 24 hours a day to push content out there. The reality of it is you don't have to. In order to get, I mean, once you're sophisticated enough and it's you have the funds to do it, the more relevant content you can put out there, the more interaction you could potentially drive, because you want to give people information that's important to them in a manner that's important to them. We all agree on that, right? But it takes a long time to continue creating content. So you can reuse content. You can play off of content in order to create conversation and so forth. I'll give you some sense. So let's say that I blog about my trip here to the ELF, right? I've been tweeting most of the week when the internet's on. But I blog about it. I get back to the office, I blog about it and so forth. That's one point, right? It's going to be up on my website. At some point, it won't be the exact same time, I'm going to move from just the blog and I'm going to make sure that I tell everybody that I blogged it, and it's going to go on Twitter and it's going to go on Facebook, and there's a whole host of other sites that I have. I have one tool that just sends it out to all of them. However, there's a couple of things to understand. You do not want to hit all the social media sites at the exact same time of the exact same day with the exact same message. You're shaking your head no.
Because people realize that you are using the tool.
Yes. What you want to do is use the tool that automatically sends out at different times, so it looks like you're more active on social media, but you're still starting with the same content to begin with. This is just one example. And then maybe a week later, unless I get responses right away, at some point I'm going to engage in discussion. So I'm going to, even if somebody doesn't respond to my social network sharing, I'm going to reach out to people I wanted to see it and say, hey, did you look at this, and start to engage them. Yes, I'm doing a little extra work, but I'm really engaging them with the same content I started with in the first place. Now, please understand, I'm not telling you to do this over and over and over and over all the time. It's just it gives you some sense of you can continue to build upon what you've already written, what you've already posted out there. Don't overpost, right? And now, a month later, I'm going to post a YouTube video about my experience at the conference, and it's basically going to be the same content that I blogged about. And all I'm doing is adding. I don't have to create new material necessarily at that point. And then hopefully by doing some of these things, it's leveraging others now. Now they start asking questions. We start communicating. We get the following going. We can start. I can ask specific questions online to see how they and others respond. And I start doing sentiment monitoring. Because I may get people that say, you went to ELF? Why? What does that open the door for me to do? If I so choose. I've got now an open door and say, this is what ELF is all about. Think about the power of that. But the point of this is, I don't have to recreate the wheel all the time. Now, I'm fortunate to have people that do a lot of the writing for me. I don't have to do a lot of this by my own because I have people back in the office. But you don't have to reinvent the wheel every time you're putting something out there. You can reuse information and just build on it. I hope you're doing this. But do it over a period of time. You don't want to do it all at one time. The other thing, well, actually, I'll skip to the next section. Calendaring is a really important thing around social media. The trick is not to be consistently consistent, though. So did you hear what I said? The trick is not to be consistently consistent. The trick to social media is to be consistently inconsistent, but yet consistent. Follow me on this? Okay. So if you're posting the same time, the same day, every single day, it almost becomes irrelevant because it seems more like a robot. But if I know I'm going to post Tuesday and Thursday, and I do post every Tuesday and Thursday, but at one day it's 6 a.m., the next day it's midnight, whatever the case must be or might be, I am now consistently inconsistent. But I'm consistent about the days that I'm actually doing it or the fact that I am sending it out there. Once you have long periods where nothing is going out, you become less relevant to the people that you're potentially trying to attract. So consistently inconsistent, but consistent. Just remember that when you're doing social media, any type of social media at all. But doing these calendars is really important as well, so you keep on track. So a calendar of, hey, I'm going to do one blog a month, and I'm going to be consistently inconsistent by hitting everybody Tuesdays and Thursdays on these topics, and Mondays and Wednesdays, if so, on these other topics. Actually lay it out. Actually have it scheduled out, because it'll make you put something in at that point. It'll make you always be thinking about, what am I going to use next that's relevant to the audience that I'm trying to get on in the first place. But again, I can't caution you enough. Overposting, overactivity on social media is the kiss of death, so to speak. Right? It'll kill you as well because you become less relevant. And again, overposting the same stuff, although I'm telling you to re-leverage some of it, can also hurt you. So you have to be very, very careful. Make sense? Okay. We're getting there. Give and get.
How often do you suggest to post an information on the official public page of the organization? Every day or Facebook?
About on Facebook? Yeah. Oh, yeah. You can do it every day if you want. Sure. There's nothing that says you can't do it every day. I wouldn't do it multiple times a day. And if you're probably going to be stretching if you're doing it every single day, unless you really have that much news coming. Every other day, every third day is fine, as long as it's active. So when your users are coming back, if you could track how often your users come back, the same user. So as a user, I come back 3 times a week, update it 3 times a week. If your average user comes back once a week, why are you updating it 3 times a week? Unless you're going to try to drive them to come back more often, then is it the frequency or is it the quality of the content that you're posting? See what I'm saying? So it's tough to just say, here's the answer to it, until you start measuring all the different pieces of it that are actually involved. And then you try, okay, if I'm at once a week, but I'm not getting them to come back more than once a week, I'm going to try 3 times and see what happens. Doesn't make a change? It's probably your content. Go back to once a week, change your content, go up to 2 times a week with the new changed content. Does that drive more traffic? Those are things that you have to try to work through, because it's not just, here's your answer.
Do you put a link on your website in every message on your public page in Facebook?
No, you're talking on your Facebook page. So if you're updating on Facebook and you're putting a link every single time, no. No. Here's what happens. So the way, especially when you look at Google rankings later on in the future, unless you're doing bit.lys or some, you know what a bit.ly is? So it'll shorten the web address. If you actually put the website to your organization every time there, so they can click on it and come back to your website from Facebook, it actually drops you in the Google native rankings. If you use the bit.lys, it drops you less. But Google doesn't like it where every single time there's a click through, it's got your website. It actually starts dropping you in the natural search rankings. Today. That could change tomorrow. Every time they change their algorithms, it changes some of the way some of this works. But for the last 2 years, it's been the more you're too repetitive, they see that as too much marketing. Now, if I take your website and link it, and then you take his website and link it, and you take his website and link it, we have all the different users. So Google's algorithm will see it's different users. It's okay. Make sense?
Yes, sir.
Other questions? Helpful?
Yes.
Okay. Give and get. What do I mean by give and get? It's not about one-way communication, right? It's actually about having this two-way communication. So one of the things that I'm sure you're all doing already, right, is giving information out to the audience that's important to them. Once you understand what's important to them, it's not just about your cause at that point. It's not just about saying, okay, we're connected now. I now have your approval to bombard you with every event we're having. Every revival we're having, I'm going to send to you. That's not going to build that influence that we're talking about. Creating white papers, information that's relevant, not necessarily just to you, but more relevant to them in a way that starts building that trust. This is one of the most valuable ways if you know who your audience is first. Because if you just go to this and you just publish white papers and you send them out and you're like, well, nobody's responding to any of them. It's you haven't figured out what's the need of your demographic in the first place. So we've got to be very careful about that. And I've seen that happen in both business and Christian organization settings, specifically more so on the Christian organization side. We publish stuff that's important to us that we understand, but maybe where that individual that we're trying to reach, they're not quite there. Does that make sense? So we've got that's how this all ties together. You've got to listen to the audience first. This whole idea of measuring. How do you know if you're having impact, if you're having awareness? How do you know if you're creating awareness? You said a few things. You talked about the people that come to your website. You can see. What are the other ways to measure things, and what are the things you want to be measuring?
A lot of people
share
sharing. Information from our website.
Yeah. Now, before I go through kind of the four main measurements, remember all the way back in the beginning, we talked about measurable goals, right? Those are the best goals to be measuring against. But we get at a point where sometimes we're just still trying to do everything, even though we know this is the best practice, we're just throwing everything out there. And we want to see what's actually impactful, what's not. So what are the kind of couple of categories? There's really four of them that we really want to be able to track and why. So shares, website traffic, what else?
Comments,
clicks. How do we track all this stuff?
Statistics,
Google Analytics. There's a ton of them out there. You don't have to use Google for it. We use a tool called Pardot. It's a lot more expensive, but it gives you some more detailed analytics than even what Google Analytics does.
What's the name?
Pardot, PARDOT.com. But it's pretty pricey. But it gives us four categories, and I'm going to give it to you in terms of more of Google Analytics, but they do the exact same thing to actually run it. So brand awareness. How do you measure brand awareness? Now, don't get to the practical of how many clicks. That's not what I'm talking about. How do you measure if your brand, and I mean the brand in terms of the organization, the mission, the message, whatever. How do you know if you have brand awareness? How can you measure this? Can you measure it?
You can ask socially.
Survey.
Ask socially?
Survey.
Survey. How else? How do I know if my message is getting out there? If I have the reach that I want to have, that I think I have, you can get a sense from some of the other statistics. But there's tools out there now. Have you heard of clout? K-L-O-U-T. What does clout measure? Try to measure. This is not an exact science. I don't understand the algorithms behind it. But K-L-O-U-T, what does clout measure? There's a couple of categories. In theory, they can tell you how much brand awareness you actually have and how deep that brand awareness goes. And I'll give you kind of three areas. So how do they do it? So again, it's this tool called Clout. There's a ton of these out there. This is not the only one that does it. Clout just happens to be worldwide one of the most commonly used ones. So it's really a reflection of your brand's influence, but it looks at a couple of things. This is the way they pitch it. I think a lot of it's true. We've used it quite a bit, but there's some other tools out there. So true reach, how many people you influence, the width of your influence. So based upon all the analytics that it gathers, how many people do you actually get to through every channel, through reposting, through everything? How broad does your reach go with that particular brand that you're talking about? So www.whatever your org is, right? How wide is that? The second thing is what they call amplification. How much influence, which means of how all those people that you connect with that are really, really wide, how much influence do you have over them where you actually get them to click and so forth and share and so forth? But it's not just how many times. With their algorithms, they can actually look at this, this, and then the third one is network impact. How influential your audience is. By extension of how influential you are on your audience, do they then take it and send it out? It's not just as simple as counting the clicks. But between these three, they'll give you a score of what your clout is. It's a term that we use. How much clout do you have when you're trying to get somebody to do something? Now, is it 100% accurate? I don't think so. But it does give organizations a good sense of if the things I'm doing in media are getting the mission, the name, and everything else out there. So one tool, one way to look at things. Website traffic, you already said that, right? I mean, this is an easy one, whether it's Google Analytics or anything else. Every domain provider can provide you with analytics. You can pay for Google Analytics if you like. There is some free stuff. But every domain hoster will generally provide some analytics, right? But remember, traffic alone is not the holy grail of social media. If you're getting the wrong people coming, if they're not staying long enough, there's all kinds of issues with that. But you do have to establish some kind of baseline, right? So you don't want to be dropping off in traffic. You don't necessarily want the only thing that you want is traffic to the website. It should be at the core of your media presence, but it's not all about how many new people that we've actually had. And then again, Google Analytics. But there's a couple of things that it tracks real easy. Visits via social referral, you know what that is, right? So did they come from Facebook? Did they come from Twitter? Did they come from, you won't get many from LinkedIn. You were gonna say something.
They even see what device they come from.
Yeah, is it a mobile device? What device is it and so forth? There's almost anything you can see. Now, if you're using LinkedIn, for an organization we use LinkedIn, it's not accurate because LinkedIn is a closed network. They want everything to be within LinkedIn, and LinkedIn and Google fight each other all the time. So the numbers you get on LinkedIn referrals, just bet they're not right, just as a side note. Conversions, meaning they completed an activity on your site. They came to your site. They put in their email address for additional information, whatever the case might be. And then assisted social conversions. They came to my site, they left, and then they came back through Facebook or something along those lines. It's important to understand how they're getting there. But again, don't make it just about the number of new users that actually come on board. Number three, website visitor loyalty. This is something you mentioned already. So understanding, is the content on your website valuable? When they come to your website, how long do they stay on your website? What pages do they click on? What pages do they not click on? What's irrelevant to the majority of the community coming to you? Means you may want to change your content because your content's not very good or it's not very relevant at that particular time. So it will track all of that. How long is somebody there? Most commonly viewed? Quickest fall off rate? Return to your website? Percentage of repeat visitors? These are all things you want to know to understand how valuable is the brand that you actually have. And then the last one, conversion rates. Visitors, churn contacts, contacts converted by referral source, again, LinkedIn, Twitter, so forth. And when I say converted, that means they actually went on the website, they put in their name, they put in their phone number, their email address, their Twitter handle, whatever you asked them for, they gave you their entire profile basically and handed you their contact information on a silver platter at that point. That means a true converted by referral source. So now you can say, okay, Facebook gets me the most conversions, so I need to spend more time and I need to hone my content on Facebook. Or it's really Twitter that's giving me most of my conversions. I may get the most traffic from Facebook, but I'm not getting conversions because it's not the right demographic. I may get less traffic from Twitter, but I could get a heck of a lot more conversions. This is more important in understanding where to spend more of your time than just how much traffic you're getting. Because if you can't convert them, they're not going to do you any good. Make sense?
Yeah.
With that, I think I am done. Questions, please.
And I observed that behavior in the last years, and we're moving into that. I mean, I'm not on the streets protesting against abortion, but I stay home and just like the event and probably comment or do something like that.
So like can give you sentiment monitoring. So it'll give you a sense of, do people agree with, at least philosophically, with that cause? That's all it's going to do. If you don't focus on the last piece of what I call a conversion, you're right. That's irrelevant. Likes is not going to get you anywhere. If you can't get them from a like to how do I engage with you to get you to really do something for my cause. Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I don't go into likes and so forth. I just put all that stuff in as sentiment monitoring because that's all it tells you. Register here now is a little bit different. That's a different call to action if you can get their information. So then I'm going to pick up the phone and call you and say, here's our cause. Would you help us with the cause? Or they fill out the registration email. And there's so many different ways to look at conversions, but you're absolutely right on that. Those types of things, likes and retweets, they're good to track for sentiment, but are they going to necessarily drive action? Not necessarily. Oh, yes, it's steve@stevelowes.com. Yeah, steve@stevelowes.com. If you send me an email, I will send you the Dropbox link. It's a big, as you can see with all the graphics, it's relatively large, and you can just download it and use it at your will. Feel free to use any of the content that's in there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.